Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Sébastien Chenu, the Front National's parliamentary candidate here in Dinan, says this is an oversimplified view. He says what is refreshing about his leader, Marine Le Pen, is that she speaks up loudly for the have-nots, the people who live in the land she calls the forgotten France. In other words, she combines nationalism with a message designed to reach out to the left.
She's modern, she has a social dimension, while her dad had a kind of Reaganoid Republican American side. She's in the great French tradition. She has a social conscience which is fed by her patriotism.
Step 3. Widening the net.
40,000 places de prison.
At a prison in the outskirts of Paris, Marine Le Pen promises 40,000 more prison places to ease overcrowding and improve pay for the overworked guards. Sitting at a table next to a trade union leader, she oozes empathy as he produces a litany of complaints. The Front National have always made law and order a priority, but the party's proving increasingly adept at reaching out to other civil servants as well.
For the last election, 2015, almost 10% of the teachers voted for the Front National. We saw the score was doubled in only 5 years, so it's very impressive.
Aymeric Durot, a 31-year-old history teacher, belongs to Collective Racine, a pro-Front National group focusing on education. Teachers were once a reliably socialist voting bloc, but Durot complains that the country's strict secularism, the separation of church and state, is under threat in classrooms because of excessive immigration.
Fortunately, we have a law voted by the parliament in 2004 to forbid the main signs of your religion. But we saw more and more and more demands of young students who really want to have a veil, the girls, of course. For the boys, we saw more and more little babes.
Little beards.
Beards. It's a problem because France was built on the principle of assimilation, and they don't accept that.
And there's another unexpected group that's being actively targeted, the LGBT community. The Front National now enjoys the support of a quarter of Paris's gay voters. All the more surprising given that Jean-Marie Le Pen called homosexuality a biological and social anomaly and recommended that HIV patients be confined to AIDSatoriums. Didier Lestrade, author of a book called Why Gays Are Turning to the Right, says the key is the link the Front National made to security, and he recalls a speech Marine Le Pen made in 2010.
She was saying, I know that you're afraid in the suburbs, whether you're gay, whether you're a woman, whether you're even white. And she was trying to seduce some of the people by proving that the National Front could be a party that would defend them against mostly Muslim. Because, you know, in France, we have this huge debate about integration and diversity, and using this fear of homophobia is very clever for any party leader.
As an activist, Didier Lestrade spent years promoting tolerance, So he was shocked to see anti-Arab and anti-black tirades on Grindr and Cruise, social media apps popular with the gay community.
The last 10 years, we've seen a lot of gay people. I mean, they were afraid to voice this kind of opinion before, and now they don't have any complex, you know, voicing racism in their ideas about how the society should be run. So the Front National seems to be the best place to come out these days if you're gay and you have rightist political views.
Context of white supremacy, Gus T. Renegade. In for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Sunday, April 23rd, 2017. So I have been told this is a second attempt at our Global Sunday Talk on Racism for the month of April. I attempted to do this broadcast last Sunday, and my Wi-Fi connection was horrendous. We could not get online to, or I was online, but I just could not get my Skype to work. I couldn't get the online stream to work. It was absolutely horrendous, and I was sitting literally about 10 feet away from where I had just broadcasted with no problems, no issues, about 2 days previously. But I think we got everything corrected. Shouldn't be an issue today, and thanks, folks, for their patience last week. Again, with our Global Sunday Talk on Racism, I think it's hugely important to think about, consistently talk about racism, white supremacy, make sure that we understand this is a global empire, global problem. If you are a black person, if you're a non-white person, period, but particularly if you are classified as black, there's no place you can go on this planet where white supremacy, racism will not be a problem for you. And hopefully we can get more victims of racism out of that mindset of thinking, you know, racism is just a little problem down in the southern part of the U.S. or South Africa or maybe, you know, a few other spots here and there. But generally speaking, things are okay on the planet. That is not true at all. And I hope just hearing different folks who participate in this broadcast getting to hear some of their thoughts, observations, and experiences will help us get a much more accurate understanding of what it means to be classified as white, what racism is, how it works. I think even though today this is not our normal time, we normally do this broadcast on the third Sunday of every month, it is an interesting time because today they are having the presidential election in France. We've been talking about that a lot. Whites in this part of the world have been talking about that a lot with Marine Le Pen. She's been compared to Donald Trump. I checked before we went on live, and it looks like she's in second, which is good enough for a runoff over there if you don't get the majority. I think it's if no one candidate gets a majority of the votes in the first round, then the top two vote getters, they go to the runoff election. So right now it looks like she will be one of the two candidates who will be participating in the runoff election if things, you know, stand about where they are right now. But we will get to some of our international listeners who didn't get a chance to join us for the call last week because we had so much disruption on the line. I think we should have Andrew joining us live from the UK. Andrew, you with us, sir?
Yes, I'm with you, Gus. Good to hear from you.
Grand. Good to hear from you as well, sir. And we had missed Andrew the last few times we had this broadcast because we had tech issues getting him on the line. Let's see. I think we have Frank Fanon with us as well, also in the UK. Frank Fanon, are you with us, sir?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me clearly?
Crystal clear. Good to have you with us, sir.
Thank you.
For sure. I think we have Mr. Fox, all the grand work on our YouTube or his YouTube channel, just posting a lot of our content and other constructive counter-racist content. Mr. Fox, you're with us, sir?
I can hear you loud and clear. Can you hear me?
Outstanding. Perfect reception thus far.
That's great.
Let's see. And I think at least for right now, last international person, African 1884, joining us live in Austria. Are you with us as well, sir?
Yes. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. You're a little bit low, African 1884. You can just make sure you speak up. Lots of black self-respect so we can hear you loud and clear.
What about?
Say again.
Is that loud enough? Is that loud enough?
That is an improvement. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
For sure. I guess To start off, I know we do not have any listeners today joining us from France, but the French presidential election is getting a lot of attention with everything going down today. They were talking about it front page of the New York Times, and it's got, I mean, not as much attention as the U.S. presidential election got when brave soldier Donald Trump was doing his thing, but a lot of attention focused on that part of the world right now. And the sound clip that I opened with, I wanted to play it last week. I thought it was so important. I think that helps explain why Marine Le Pen will be one of the top two vote getters today and will qualify for the runoff. They explained in that clip, she's trying to broaden her base. She didn't want to just depend on the stalwart race soldiers in France to get her the presidency. She wanted to expand and get other individuals classified as white who may not have supported a person like her before. So she reached out to the LGBT community. Hey, get on with Team Le Pen. We will protect you guys. We'll make sure that you all are safe and are not being subjected to any attacks like what happened in Orlando at that nightclub last year. Reaching out to other groups. They said teachers were normally reliable. When you talk about teachers and white women, I don't know what the demographics are over there, but I know when you talk about teachers here in the States, you're talking about a lot of white women, a highly disproportionate number of white women. I strongly suspect it would have been the same thing over there, appealing to white women voters. Hey, I'm with you all. I know it's been tough economically, and I am your candidate. I will make sure that you all are doing better. Just that clip that you heard was only about 5 minutes from a 1 hour segment, but I thought it had a lot of interesting info on what's kind of unfolding today. Any thoughts on what has transpired? I don't know if you all have been paying attention to the presidential election in France.
Hello, Gus, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. This is Andrew in the UK.
Yeah. I've not been paying a lot of attention to it, but I've been paying a little bit of attention to it. And it's just what I've noticed anyway, is that it's just they're playing on the same kind of I think the racist party over there. That's the
National Front.
The daughter of basically the National Front. That's exactly what it is, really, because that's what the racists used to be called in London, in the UK. They used to call themselves the National Front, and as far as I'm concerned, some would disagree with me, but that's morphed into the BNP, which again seems to have morphed into UKIP, right? To me, it's all the same set of people. But again, it's this whole thing against foreigners or supposed foreigners, because they're not even foreigners. You talk about people that are born in France or people that are born in the UK, people that are actually born in these countries. So again, legally, right, you can't ship people back anywhere when they have a French passport or when they have a British passport or when they have a German passport. You can't ship people back anywhere. There's nowhere to ship people back to, you know, so it's... It's racists playing on not so much the fear. Well, yeah, I suppose it is the fears of white people, but it's white people cutting off their noses to spite their own faces, especially the white people in the UK, you know, around Brexit. Because as I understand, sorry to change the subject. So if I'm doing that, stop me. But it's just the whole thing about, it's quite funny, actually. It's the whole thing about Boris Johnson coming back to the UK from meeting your President Trump, and President Trump saying, oh, you lot are going to be at the big front of the queue for a deal that's going out. Now, we just heard last week that's not going to happen. He's going to be doing deals with the EU first and foremost, which I think is quite funny.
Wow. Fascinating. No, I didn't think that was a change of topic, because I think this election has been compared often, not just to the election of Donald Trump, but also Brexit, with a lot of the same themes in terms of white voters being frustrated about immigration, generally talking about non-white people coming into their part of the world and being upset about that, or feeling like somehow white people have been left out. And their concerns are being ignored. I think a lot of the same themes that came up in exactly what you're talking about with the situation with the Brexit vote last year as well. Did any of our other folks that are with us on the line, do y'all have comments on what's transpired with the French presidential election? And it's the Front National. That's the Marine Le Pen party. So, I mean, it is really the National Front, same name exactly as the British party. Did other listeners that are with us, do y'all have commentary on the French election?
Yeah, I'd like to say something. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. This is African 1884, Austria.
Yes, I've been following the elections, and I just want to say that right now she's, I mean, most of the right-wing, quote-unquote right-wing parties in Europe are pushing the agenda or the propaganda that they're trying to reduce the number of foreigners. But we should be very careful in the sense that they don't really mean, just like what Gus said before, it's mostly non-white people they're making a reference to. So, for example, if you see in Austria and in France, for that matter, I believe that many people from Eastern Europe who are quote-unquote foreigners, but this case, it does not apply to them when they're trying to push out foreigners. And you remember like someone like Nicolas Sarkozy, he's originally Hungarian. He was a French president and is originally Hungarian, you know. So when they talk about foreigners, you know, trying to reduce the movement of foreigners into the EU, they're mostly talking about non-white people. Yeah. And we shouldn't form any alliances because they try to do that here in Austria, where they try to, you have other foreigners, let's say from Poland or from Hungary or from Greece or from Italy, trying to rally around other African people here, black people here, saying that, okay, the right wing are against foreigners and everything. And a lot of African people here are confused about that, and they tend to go on the street to them and demonstrate. In all reality, it's not their fight. It's not their struggle, you know. This is why folks are out here to promote confusion. When they speak about pushing out foreigners, they just mean non-white people. So these are the foreigners from Poland or from Hungary. Any white person is not regarded as a foreigner in this part of the world, specifically in Austria.
Hmm. Interesting. If I had a quick question, when you say a lot of black people, because that same conversation we've been having it here when black people going out participating in the protests about the immigration bans and what have you here in the States, what would your response be to people who might say, even some black people who might say, hey, this is our fight? Because when they're talking about we don't want all these immigrants here, they've also said that they don't want people from the continent. You got a lot of highly melanated folks from the continent that they've also said, we don't want you here either. You know, get back to wherever you came from, too. So this is our fight. This is relevant to us.
You mean to say that there are melanated people from the continent in the U.S. who would say that's their fight, too? Is that your question?
Oh, yeah. In the States or anywhere. There might even be black people in Austria who would say that, you know, hey, African 1884, this is our fight, because they're trying to kick all of us out, non-white and black people, period. Just all of us. They want us all to get out of the country.
Yeah, that's accurate. But the other white people here, like I said, they'll be like, for example, from Hungary or from Poland or from the Czech Republic, who are defined by the Austrian nation state as foreigners. You know, so they tend to mingle and group with black people to say, okay, let's fight against the right-wing parties that are trying to get rid of all foreigners. So it tends to confuse the black people because we think that they are on our side, but in all reality, they're not on our side. Do you understand me? Do I make any sense?
Oh, absolutely. You made perfect sense before. I just wanted to get your response if someone were to take that position with you. I think that's a great way of explaining it, because white people are great about that sort of thing. To come in and say, oh, yeah, this is our fight. You need to join. Seems like the same type of thing with the gay rights movement. It'll be lots of things where racists, they'll come and try and rope black people to come in and support. Like, yeah, we're in this together, fighting to, you know, to overcome oppression. And nothing could be further from the truth. These white Poles, exactly. They'll just be assimilated. They'll be Austrian probably within a week or two, and racist, not just Austrian. They'll be racist within about a week or two.
Yes, sir.
Let's think. We got Andrew's thoughts. We got African 1884. Frank or Mr. Fox, you all have any thoughts you wanted to add on the France election?
Mr. Fox here. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I've not been covering the election in France, but what I have heard from the news clips and what you've been discussing, it's nothing really new. It's just white people being white people. And they're just trying to be more sophisticated in how Le Pen's trying to branch out to the young French youth as well, because that picture you've got for the broadcast, you actually see Miss Le Pen surrounded by a lot of white women, a lot of white teenagers in there, and now they've actually gone for the LGBTQ, is that what it's called? Because I always get the LGBT.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. Now she's trying to go for that group. Well, these people are part of these groups, LGBT. They're white. That's all around the world. Majority, well, in the West anyway, these groups are predominantly, you know, made up and controlled by white people. So it's just white people who are anti-sexual. But they still are white and they still are racist. But people like to see people who are so-called queer or homosexual as being non-racist, which always confuses me. But it's just racist trying to be more sophisticated and just branch out to another group of people. That's how I see it.
Absolutely. Sometimes they'll even do that and branch out to get black people to vote for them. Not that they aren't racist. Just we have an agenda and, you know, we might need some warm bodies or a few votes or whatever it is. You're still niggers, but we're just trying to reach out to get some people to support what it is we're trying to do under the system of white supremacy.
Just to add something on there. In Europe, that seems to be the default for all white people, no matter where you go. These countries who 50 years ago were trying to get rid of fascism and fighting off Hitler back in 1940, when it always comes down to bad economy or more non-white foreigners coming in the country, they always turn to Nazism again. It's like it's a set default.
Absolutely. Absolutely. White supremacy remains the default. They just get more explicit about sometimes. They become more explicit about that at some points. That's about the only difference. I guess certainly not least. Frank Vanon, did you have anything you wanted to add on the subject, the French presidential election?
Hi. Sorry, I've not really been talking much because I'm actually having my dinner at the moment as well. Joining in on the show. I don't really have much else to add to what everyone said, to be honest. I think for me I've not really been following the elections as closely as maybe I would have loved to, but I saw something the other day about how if Marine Le Pen wins, then this could mean the end of the European Union, because they also plan, or she also plans to follow suit with Brexit and do a French exit from the European Union.
Hold on one second. I think it's have in terms of like. Hang on one second, Frank Fanon. I'm sorry. I just wanted to. I think we're getting a little bit of echo. If it's it might be African 1884. If you could maybe use your mute button, or anyone if you have speakerphone on, because I think we're picking up the echo for people if you are using speaker function on your Skype. If you just mute when you're not speaking, that should eliminate it. And then whenever you're ready to speak, click your unmute button, and you'll be ready to roll. Much obliged. Sorry, Frank Fanon. If you want to start again, that way we can hear you clearly. Frank Fanon, are you with us, sir? Not hearing you.
Yeah, no. I mean, I was just saying that the Brexit, the thing I've heard about the French elections is that it could mean the end of the European Union as we have it at the moment, in terms of if Marine Le Pen wins. She also plans to go the way that the UK has gone in terms of pulling out of the European Union. I don't know what that means for peace, quote unquote. You know, because obviously for us it's always war, but for them, I don't know if that could maybe mean like a kind of third world war. I read something the other day as well. It's called Generation of. generational theory or generation theory. I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but it's this theory that every 90 years, there's always a big war that happens. It could either be like a civil war, say like the American Civil War. It could be a world war, and the white social scientists predict that the next 90-year cycle, should be coming up at about 2020. And obviously, if you see all the stuff that's happening at the moment, Trump getting elected, the prevalence or the openness of white people to be as white supremacists as possible today, in terms of as we see happening in Europe and this French elections, that could be a possibility. I'm not sure if it would happen, but you know, these folks are they're very war loving people, and I don't have much else to add. Really, everyone's sort of made really good points about the elections. I mean, I think as well. The other thing is the so-called terrorist attack last week in Paris. I don't know how this plays into the elections. I don't know if this would maybe even help Marine Le Pen garner more votes, because obviously she can play on that to, you know, show the people that look. If you elect me, I plan to stop all the terrorist attacks, and this is why we need to kick these people out, and I'm the one best place to do that for you guys. That's all I have to say for now.
Absolutely, I thought that as well. In fact, President Donald Trump, he publicly voiced the same opinion that classified as a terrorist attack last week or just a couple days ago in France that left a police officer dead, that would help Marine Le Pen. That's what he said explicitly. I thought the same thing, and in fact, it reminded me exactly.
Wow. Really? You say that?
Oh, yeah. This got reported at the end of the week that he thought it would help Marine Le Pen. Some white people got mad and said that they thought it was really tacky for him to make a comment like that or what have you. But I thought he was being truthful because people said the same thing when he was running last year. People said it repeatedly that if there had been a terror, or we can just tick off the ones that happened, the Pulse nightclub, that they thought these type of incidents would help Donald Trump. And he won. So maybe they did.
Interesting.
Can I add something here?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, there's going to be more and more of these types of attacks. Personally, I wouldn't be surprised. Sorry, if European countries weren't organising these types of attacks, because at the end of the day, how can a president be so categorical in saying these are going to help, you know, these are going to help one candidate get elected? You know, how is he so much of an expert on that kind of thing anyway? Why would how can a president, right, be voicing those kind of views anyway? You know, so when you think about it, right, it's almost, you know, I wouldn't put anything past these people. And the whole thing about doing these kind of attacks, if you like, or causing this kind of, or setting, you know, certain characters, certain things in motion to make Manchurian candidates, whoever, you know, whatever you might want to say, you know, I mean, to be honest, if I was him, I would do it. I'd literally put people up for doing whatever to get what I want to happen. You know, it's not rocket science. As far as I'm concerned, that's a metaphor, right? You know, it's the kind of thing. It's the kind of thing that, you know, this doesn't only happen in films. Do you know what I mean? You know, and so none of that. If that were happening, it wouldn't surprise me. It really wouldn't. And as far as I'm concerned, I think it does happen. You know, I think it happens every single day where certain characters get put up to do certain acts in order to elicit a general mood within society. You know, I don't think that's a stretch of the imagination. But what I was going to say is, it's interesting how waves of racism sweep through the white world. So you've got a move of racism moving over people all over Europe, and then the way it seems to waft back to America, and then it wafts back to Europe. And it seems to be a collective sort of mind state. And I think it's also in direct correlation with, if you like, the economic rise of non-white countries, you know, and the fact that, yes, we're still living in a neo-colonial situation, but yet those countries that they used to be able to sort of cause strife and warfare, right, those countries are a little are more stable than what they've been for years, and I think that's and are growing economically, and they're getting, those countries are, I'm talking about African countries as well as South America as well as India, all of these countries, and as well as China. It seems that the rest of the world is less inward looking in terms of fighting and bickering amongst themselves, and I think that causes white countries a lot of stress. You know, that's what I can see. The fastest growing economies, some of them are on the African continent, you know. And so I think all of this plays into white fear, you know, or if you like, as Public Enemy put it, fear of a black planet. And I think that's what these elections are all about, you know.
White genetic annihilation. I think that's how Dr. Welsing would phrase it. And I think her work influenced that Public Enemy album. That and exactly what you said, the whole thrust of your commentary, that these type of, like the terrorist attack that happened in France a couple of days ago, these type of events, racists could be the ones orchestrating these attacks to change public opinion, influence how people vote, get people to be more afraid, induce people to be more explicitly racist. Maybe we want to operate the plantation in a different sort of manner, so we'll get people all in hysterics. The Negroes have run amok, and you know, we need to get tight here. We're going to lose control.
Exactly.
Like, racist. Go ahead.
You know, because the truth is, right, if Oliver North, right, and people like him, right, were quite happy to bring drugs into African-American communities, what, 20 years ago, was it? 25 years ago, whenever it was, right? If he's happy to do that, right, then you know, the CIA would do anything, wouldn't they? Was he not working for the CIA at the time? If, I taped a documentary with whereby it spoke about the CIA allowing a well-known black drug dealer at the time, Freeway... What's his name? I can't remember what his name is. I still got the documentary somewhere, but
Rick Ross.
Yeah, I think that's was that. Anyway, it was a well-known drug dealer at the time, right? They allowed him to basically bring drugs in without. They knew who the guy was, but they allowed him to carry on operating, and it's for a reason. You know that they flooded African American communities with drugs, right? And that was the CIA doing that. They were the ones behind it. You know, there's a book that a friend was telling me about. I've never read it, but he used to always quote from it and talk about it. A book about British police called Bent Coppers, right? So these people are engaged in dealing with what a man called Frank Kitson called the enemy within. How to deal with the enemy within, right? And that's what and his book. I can't remember the title of his book. Frank Kitson. He was the one that was engaged worked for the British Army in Northern Ireland. He worked for the British Army in Africa. Right, so he's about dealing with the enemy within, and we are all considered to be the enemy within, right? And so it's how to destabilize activism within non-white communities in white countries, how to destabilize those communities, how to mess them about, and how to make them look to be the enemy to the host population, right? And so no, but you know, none of their behavior, right, would ever astound me or amaze me, because it's all about how you can make the enemy within, that's us, look to the host population. That's it.
Wow, as Andrew was sharing about these means of manipulating other racists, or just manipulating large groups of people, white and non-white, how they think about particular events or how they behave. I was reading the remainder of that article that I just read from, there were many where Donald Trump predicted that the terrorist attack would boost Marine Le Pen. And further down in the article, it just goes back to give like more information about the alleged attack and the officer that was reportedly killed in the attack. And they have a photo. This to me looks like someone who'd be classified as white, this officer. And so the caption underneath this picture, it reads, "This undated image provided Friday, April 21st, by FLAG, an association of LGBT police officers, shows French police officer Javier Hugel." And this is the officer that was allegedly killed in the attack. Now, I just played at the beginning, and I had intended to play that last week. This wasn't even, you know, like I was trying to make it. But I just played that last week where Marine Le Pen and her campaign, they were explicitly talking about reaching out to gay people and saying, hey, LGBT people, which is exactly what they got in the caption, saying, I'm going to reach out to these people. Hey, I'm with you. I'm going to make sure that you all are protected. We're going to get these enemies within non-white people. We're going to get them out of here, deal with these Muslims. They might, you know, use a lot of different codes. But in my view, they're talking about non-white people. We're going to deal with these dark people. I'm the one to keep you safe. I look at that sort of thing and say, wow, that is interesting, particularly given, I think, with that Pulse nightclub attack, I recall Donald Trump saying something very similar after the attack. Gay people, vote for me, or LGBT people, vote for me. I am your guy. I will keep you safe. I will protect you. We'll get that wall up. We'll keep these dark people. We'll get them in check. Not going to have any more of this foolishness allowing these folks to just run around here and do whatever they want to and shoot up LGBT nightclubs. I couldn't be in error. Context of white supremacy. The number is 641-715-3640, and the code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. If anybody is curious, or you have a little extra free time on your hands while we're the last, I don't know, 50 minutes that we're on the air, is this person online like classified as gay? Because I don't see that explicitly in the article. If anybody, listeners, folks that are listening in, or if you're on the archives, his name is Javier Hugel, X-A-V as in victory, I-E-R. That's his first name, and then last name, J-U-G-G-L-E. If you do a search, is he classified as gay? That would, you know, just be interesting. Interesting information to know. Certainly, there are many other things happening in the world. This is not a three-hour broadcast. This is shorter. There are lots of other things happening besides the French presidential election, even though there were some other interesting things happening in France. I also wanted to ask if, I don't know if it got international attention, the black male that is accused of having shot three white people in California a couple days ago and saying that he did this. He said he was upset with white people. He yelled out in court that he wanted black people to get reparations. They stopped the proceeding and said that they wanted to get him mental evaluation. This just went down the last couple days. Did that get international attention, or was that one that didn't make it across the pond?
Sorry, Gus, I missed the last bit. Could you say that again, please? What didn't make it across the pond?
I was asking if any of you all heard there was a black male just a couple days ago in California. He is accused of having shot and killed three white people and having done so because he was upset about racism. They said that he wanted specifically, he was targeting white people. They have footage where he was in court and he yelled out reparations for black people. And they stopped the proceeding and said, you know, we need to get him a mental evaluation to see if he's, you know, thinking correctly. But yeah, this happened just a couple days on Tuesday, I believe, on Tuesday of this past week. I was curious if that made it across the pond to you all. Did you all hear about that?
No, I haven't heard about it. I'm not sure if anybody else has.
Hello?
Hello?
Yep, we can hear you all, I guess. African 1884, we can call people out. African 1884?
Yes, I heard about it, but it did not... was not, I mean, I got to find out through other media outlets, not through the main or national news here. So it didn't really, was not really in the public media and all that. But what was the other situation that took place in that area of the world? This brother who shot this old man, I can't remember what the brother's name was, and then he put it on Facebook Live. I don't know if you heard about that, Gus?
Yes, Mr. Stevens. I forgot. I think that's his name, Steve.
Yeah. That made it made it out here in the media outlets and everything, and it was very much reported about, you know. Otherwise, the other situation where the black male shot the three white men, no, that was not reported on.
Wow, now that is interesting. That's something else I appreciate as well, being able to see sometimes what things big news internationally and what things, you know, they kind of hush down. I guess, Mr. Fox, did you have commentary on this? Did you hear about the shooting in California?
I heard about both shootings. only heard a brief part about the one in California. All I heard was a black male shoots. I don't know if he shot a couple of police officers or just white people. I don't know if he was caught or shot. I just heard that, and I just thought it was very suspicious, especially with the other gentleman who shot the old black man on Facebook. I just thought it was very strange as well. I'm just waiting for more news to come out on it, but I just think that both incidences are very strange, because the first one who shot the white people, I don't know if they were police officers, but he's alive, which I think is pretty weird. Because if he's getting a psych evaluation, that means they've caught him. So I think it's very strange that he's alive, because black armed men get either blown up or shot. So it's a bit strange how this one has been captured. And the other gentleman who I hear took his own life, which I thought was pretty strange as well. That's all I really have to say on them two incidences.
They said the suspect with the California shooting, Corey Ali Muhammad, they alleged that he yelled Allahu Akbar or some phrase that people would associate with Islam after he did these killings. But I think that's important, too, that he was not killed, that he is alive. He was taken into custody after committing this act, and saying that he was doing so specifically to target white people. And before I ask if Frank Fanon has commentary, I also thought it was important. This incident, the Fresno killings, this incident happened the same day in California, the same day that John Singleton's documentary on the 1992 LA riots debuted. And that 2-hour documentary, it had, I'd say about the first hour of it, was a lot of footage of black people, mostly black males in California, talking about how they were upset with white people and angry and felt justified in going out and burning up things and beating up white people. They kept showing that footage over and over again of the black people beating up Reginald Denny, the white guy that they pulled out of the truck and hit him with. They kept over and over again and over and over again. And then they talked to some of them. And yeah, I was mad at white. And I just thought, wow, that's interesting that this would happen. The shooting would happen today and they would have this movie on today. Frank Fanon, did you have commentary on this? Did you hear about this shooting in California?
Hello?
Yes, sir. We can hear you.
I was going to say about the shooting in California. I heard about that, but it was only on Facebook that I saw it on Facebook. I didn't really see any newspapers here in the UK or any TV media kind of showing it on the TV. The other shooting, where the younger black man shot the older black man, that was on TV. I actually saw that at work when I was on my break, and you had the so-called feminists coming out talking about toxic masculinity and how black men, they're basically using this thing of like black men being you know, this overly violent black men killing others because of women, and like, you shouldn't blame women for your toxic masculinity and all that kind of stuff. So that was on the TV. I was also going to say that I checked where you asked it. If we could check the French police officer, and he is gay. That I actually saw that on the Guardian website just now. The French police officer that was shot in the so-called terrorist attack last week, he was gay. So yeah.
Fascinating. Much obliged for checking on that for us, Frank Vinon. But yeah, that is interesting. And again, like I said, just seeing what information, you know, white people say, yeah, this is something that should be talked about worldwide. This is something that, no, we're not going to talk about this one worldwide. That's fascinating, just with those two events that happened within about, I think, 48 hours of each other just over the past week. But we just talked about that as the concept of toxic masculinity. We just talked about that yesterday evening. I think it was Ken Steele. He was on the program for the compensatory call-in, and he said he was seeing that term exclusively applied to black people, that with all of the talk about Bill O'Reilly and him losing his job at Fox News this week for allegations of sexual misconduct, didn't see that term applied left and right to Bill O'Reilly. It was Mr. Stevens, I think that's his name, Steve Stevens, the black male who's alleged of doing this social media killing this past weekend. It was applied to him, Bill Cosby, other black males, not rampant numbers of whites. You just go out and, you know, pick at random who engaged in these behaviors. Excellent point that Mr. Steele made yesterday evening. Can I just add
something else to that point?
For sure.
In light of the point you just made about toxic masculinity, this is why I'm actually looking forward to Dr. Corey's new book when it comes out. I think it's coming out in the next few weeks. The Man Not, I think, is its title, and I'm really looking forward to reading that. So, yeah.
Shout to Dr. Curry. Absolutely. I'm hoping he can hook me up with a preview copy. Maybe I can see if I can write a review. We can do a swap if I can get a preview copy. But yep, it's supposed to be coming out within the next few weeks, hopefully. We did have. If folks have questions, I see Thomas in New York has a question. If folks that are listening in, if you have a question, you want to take advantage, you want to ask anything, our international participants, feel free. We have about a little over 30 minutes left in the program. The number 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *6. If you would like to participate. Thomas in New York, do you have a question you wanted to ask? You should be with us. Let's see.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Good evening, Gus. Good evening to the International Counter Research. I did have a question, but I did also have a couple of points just to make on top of the points you guys made. Very interesting how they play one story, not the other. Not surprising, but just interesting. I heard a lot about nationalism, and I don't see nationalism ever playing out in the United States. They don't care where you're from as long as you're white here. You know, you never gonna see an instance where they're like beating up Polish people or another group of white people, because once they step foot here, they're all white, you know, and they coalesce behind just flat out being able to practice racism however they want. And I think they're pretty cool with that, you know. That's the end agenda of nationalism is usually a racial grand governance, so they already have that here. They don't need to regress into a national ideal. They just coalesce behind whiteness. The guy brought up generational warfare. I think he said like every 90 years or so, there's a huge war. And, you know, once again, that doesn't apply here. The U.S. has been at war for 222 of its 240 years here. So they find a way to go to war with someone, someone non-white, to, you know, keep their white thing going. My question to the international audience is, and I'll just to add context, for the years prior to Obama, the way that Putin was described in the media here was like an evil person, a diabolical, maniacal person. And then Obama got in, and then he became sort of a genius, and Obama was the dummy. And he got smart in Obama. His evilness wasn't played up until now that Trump's here. And now we're hearing, you know, this evil Putin again. And I just want to know, is that the same thing that's happening over there in the UK and France and other European countries? And thanks for taking my call, Gus.
Hello?
Yes, sir, we can hear you. This is Andrew in the UK.
Yeah. It's interesting because, yes, what I've heard on the news in this country is that you generally got where it all started, right? Was whether or not Putin is tampering with the election in America. That's, you know, that's where it all started, and whether or not Donald Trump has some kind of relationship with Putin. You know that's where it all started. But all of a sudden, now, Hillary Clinton, someone in America, maybe Hillary Clinton was asking questions as to whether or not Putin interfered with the election, and then which obviously, you know, whether or not it was just to mess around the election a little bit, or whether or not it was to help his so-called friend Trump. So I think now it seems to me that Donald Trump is trying to move the is trying to play smoke and mirrors. Sorry, another metaphor, but he's trying to basically shift the discussion away from Putin's interference in the American election, or to move the discussion away from him helping Donald Trump to get in power. And has moved it, you know, it seems to have shifted to something else, right? So as far as I'm concerned, it seems to be, you know, it's just a ploy from Donald Trump so that people forget the fact that, or seems to be maybe a fact that Putin helped him to get in power, you know, and that's what, you know, that's what Americans really need to talk about, you know. Well, what is the relationship between Donald Trump and Putin? You know, this whole thing about demonizing Putin because he's apparently helping, you know, the Syrian leader to stay in power. You know, all of that there is a load of nonsense. Donald Trump couldn't give him. He doesn't care about the Syrian people. He doesn't care. What is he? Some sort of humanitarian now? He doesn't care about the Syrian people. He doesn't care about any poor people. You know, and that's what the Americans need to understand. That's what, you know, that's what white people in America need to understand. He does not care about he doesn't care about Syrian poor people. You know, the conversation needs to be, what is the link between Donald Trump and Putin around the American election? You know, that's the real question to everybody listening. You know, so yes, he's demonized over here. Sorry, Putin is now demonized in the UK, but that's only because the English Secret Service basically are trying to pally up, trying to be friends with the American Secret Service, and that's the deal that they have. But the real conversation is, what link does Donald Trump have with Putin around him getting into power? That's the real, that's what people really need to be talking about. But no one seems to be talking about that anymore. I know there's an investigation in America at the moment, but I'll tell you what, as long as that investigation into that particular issue is going on, that's as long as you're going to hear about this whole Syrian thing and Putin being a baddie and Donald Trump apparently helping, you know, not being happy with it and helping the poor, sad, poor people in Syria, right? The two are going to go along, right, for the same length of time.
Hmm. Appreciate that, Andrew, in the UK. Let's see. Frank Benon, Mr. Fox, 1884. Did you all want to respond to Thomas in New York's question about how Putin is perceived or talked about in your part of the world?
The British don't like Putin. And you have to remember, anybody who has been an enemy of Putin in Russia and has come over to London or the UK, because you have a lot of Russians in the UK, especially a lot of Russian billionaires and millionaires. And I think two prominent outspoken enemies of Putin who have come over to the UK and seeked asylum or have set up home here have died very mysteriously or just assassinated. So MI5, MI6 and just British intelligence on a whole do not like Russia, because Russia at times always come over and check the responsive times of the RAF. They might send a Russian bear bomber over and that bear bomber gets intercepted and chased off. But the Russians are always testing England, because they actually do know England really couldn't stand up to Russia. So England does need America, but the UK do not like Putin. And what you see over in Syria could turn into another Vietnam. So you have the Syrian people who are classed as non-white in the West, but you can have two factions, Russia supporting Assad and then UK and the US supporting the opposition, fighting and having another Cold War based on non-white people in the so-called Middle East.
Frank Vanon, African 1884, did you want to respond to how Putin is perceived, viewed in your part of the world?
Yeah, I was going to make the same point that Mr. Fox just made, which is that here in the UK, Russia is basically not, like, regardless of what time it is, the British people don't like the Russians. Like, they just have a thing against them, and I think maybe this stretches back to even the 1918 Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, and I think maybe that's partly to do with the fact that the Russian royal family that was taken out as a result of the revolution, they related to the British royal family, and maybe that's where the animosity stems from. Because going to school here and even at work, I normally watch the Russia Today channel when I'm on my break or something. Because the TV at work is usually on BBC or on Sky News, and I know what they're going to be talking about. So I just want something different. I know it's still white supremacist. However, it's not like a UK variant of that. It's like a Russian variant of that. And my work colleagues, they get visibly offended. They're just ordinary white British people, but they get visibly offended every time they come into the canteen and they see the TVs on Russia Today, and they're just like, wow, why are you always watching the Russians? Like, are you Russian? Like, obviously they can't accuse me of being like a Russian, but they kind of ask me, and they're kind of like, you know, what's your deal with the Russians, man? Stop watching their channel kind of thing. Stop watching their propaganda channel. They actually even explicitly say propaganda to me. Yeah, I mean, regardless of what time of the day it is, they don't like Russians here. Yeah, so that's it.
Interesting. African 1884 in Austria, do you have commentary on Putin's perception, your part of the world?
Yes. Let me just give it a little bit of context. Right up to 1945, two countries within Europe, what you call Europe, were signified as being important. And one was Switzerland because of banking reasons, and the second one was Austria because of diplomacy reasons. So in Austria, the Austrians or the Austrian government does not tend to depict Putin as an enemy of the world. as maybe you'd have it in the US or in the UK, because Austria tries to be right there in the middle and not to choose sides. So I remember one friend telling me, he's a white male, not exactly a friend, pardon me, a white male told me once that there will never be a terrorist attack in two countries in the EU. And those two countries are Austria and Switzerland. And there will never be any terrorist attack. It could happen in what you call, maybe if it's a white supremacist doing it, they will do it in France, they'll do it in Italy, they'll do it in Spain, they'll do it in the UK, but they'll never do it in Austria and Switzerland. Now, just to go back to answer the question, in Austria, Putin is not viewed as an enemy of the state or of the EU and everything. Austrians or the Austrian state tends to be or tries to be neutral.
That is interesting. Wow. Neutral. That is, I don't even know what that would look like. I hope that answers Thomas in New York's question from the folks that we have with us. Let's see, the person who dialed in last four digits, how confusing. Well, the other person who dialed in with a hand up line should be open. Feel free.
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Greetings, everyone. I'm sorry, I missed the beginning of the program. So I was going to ask a question about something that I heard recently on BBC's podcast. Something, it relates to something I noticed during the previous election year. Excuse me. I noticed a lot of pandering in pandering of certain communities or certain groups of people, I guess, in particular with Hillary Clinton, like going on radio and being asked like really stupid questions, in my opinion. Well, okay, this question's stupid, but really mundane questions. And I was listening to the BBC's podcast yesterday. Well, I was listening to it today. And they mentioned that the Duke and Duchess, if I'm correct, I guess William and Kate, they had been on BBC or a News One radio, I believe it was called. And I noticed there were similar questions like, oh, what do you do? You wear pajamas and all this other stuff. I was curious, the people on the lines, and forgive me, I don't know who all is here, but the people on the line, like, if you notice that and what you think about that, that kind of like trying to pander, I guess, to the everyday person.
Did folks, did you all catch the question? She said she heard on the BBC, and it seems like the similar type of pandering that happens at election time, where politicians or, you know, these folks in office or what have you, they'll go on radio programs, do interviews, and just get asked a lot of silly questions that don't really seem to be about substance, real issues, solving problems, like what kind of pajamas do you wear, and that sort of goofiness, trying to appeal to quote-unquote regular people. She said, I guess, have you all noticed this same trend?
Sorry, guys. Again, I missed the last bit. Have I noticed the same trend as what?
When you either have politicians, when it's election time, that they'll do interviews or go around and try and talk to people and just participate in a lot of silly dialogue. We asked a lot of silly questions about, you know, what type of pajamas they wear, and like they're trying to appeal with regular people. And she just said, had you observed that same type of trend?
Yeah. I mean, that's just politicians doing what politicians do. The way I see it, anyway. So that's just politicians doing what politicians do in order to be in the public eye, appear to be amenable. You know, one of the people. You know, so they will go on talk. Well, recently they'll go on talk shows. You know, show that they've got a sense of humour. show that, you know, may even go out, kiss babies, dance with black people down in Brixton somewhere or something like that, or, you know, do anything to try and be in the public eye. They'll even go to churches. Some white politicians will go to black churches, stand up there and speak and try and get votes. You know, a politician will do anything to get and say anything in any place to get votes. You know, to me anyway, that's what it means to be a politician.
Sorry,
Gus?
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, sorry, just add clarity to my question. It was more so the particular system by the BBC with the, I guess they call it a monarchy, Deacon Jefferson, if I'm correct. I don't believe they're voted for. So, like, you know, just bloodline things. I found it interesting that they're, like, on the radio trying to, I guess, just appeal to people because they're not voted for. So I was just curious, like, what do you think the purpose of that is? Because they made the statement even. They were like, oh, this is the new monarchy. Like, this is what they're going to do now. So I was just curious about that. Like, yeah, I totally agree with you. Politicians do that all the time, but these people aren't voted for, as far as I know. So I was just curious about that particularly. Like, more so if you've heard that radio, I guess, interview with the deconstructors, and then, like, if you didn't, what do you just think in general about, like, people who aren't voted for trying to, I guess, appeal for some reason?
I think I understand. Can I come back on that one, Gus, please?
For sure.
You see, in this country, we've got no choice, right? We have to have the monarchy. We have to pay for the monarchy. You know, if you're a working person in this country, your tax money goes to keeping this family, right, until they die, right? And then you keep their kids, you keep all of their families, uncle and aunts, as far as I understand it, unless I'm wrong. And you've got no choice about it. You know, there's many people, and you have no choice. There's many people that would prefer this country to become a republic. In other words, you know, so everybody in power is elected, right? At the moment, this is not a republic. It's a monarchy with an elected parliament, you know, and that came about through a man called Oliver Cromwell, who cut off a king's head, right? And so that's why you have a monarchy that's kept and paid for by the people in this country through tax money. Also, you may not know this, but the House of Lords, you've got the House of Commons that you vote for, but guess what? After the House of Commons, right, some of these people go and sit in the House of Lords, and the House of Lords is, you know, that's unelected. That's not elected. So you don't vote for them people in the House of Lords. They just go and sit there. I'm not sure how much of our tax money goes to keeping people in the House of Lords, but that's an unelected body. As I understand it as well, unless somebody can tell me I'm wrong, isn't it true that maybe somebody else who comes from this country can say, isn't it true that that seat in the House of Lords goes to somebody in the family? And that's why a lot of people want to get rid of the House of Lords as well. As far as I'm concerned, all of that needs to be washed away and wiped away. Because I don't know how you can have one family that's above every other family. To me, that's a total joke.
Gus, could I ask something?
We heard Mr. Fox. If you could speak up, please, that would be grand. But yes, go ahead, sir.
Yes, I just want to just add on to what Mr. Fox just said in regard to the quote-unquote royal family in the UK. I think recently, I think it was like 4 or 5 days ago, the Queen turned 91 years old. And I remember at work, I was talking to a non-white male, and he was residing in Abu Dhabi, the United Arab Emirates, before moving to Austria. And he told me they have something similar in the United Arab Emirates, where you have these light-skinned people. You know, some of them call themselves, they do classify themselves as Arabs, but I believe they come from the same root as the white folks that you find in what you call Europe. And they have the same kind of setup in the United Arab Emirates, where the people that belong to the royal family, they're regarded as special. than anyone else on earth. And I told him that you want to deal with racism, white supremacy, we have to first, I mean, as an example, we have to look at this kind of setups that you have, for example, what you have in the UK with the royal family. That is a clear display of racism, white supremacy, that you have a family that comes on earth and they're better than anyone else, regardless. They don't work. They don't put in any effort to make a living other than robbing and stealing. You know, that's just despicable. And it's interesting that a lot of people in what you call Europe or in the world are content with that family. That's amazing. And it's despicable. That's all I have to add. Thank you.
Well said. Sorry, that was African 1884 in Austria. My apologies. Mr. Fox, Frank Fanon, do you all have anything you wanted to add to that? Or if you all heard this BBC segment most recently?
I think I'll pass on that one.
Pass on that one, right on. I don't know if Frank Fanon had anything to add to that.
I don't have much else to add, really.
Right on.
Yeah.
I've got something else to say about that, if I can, Gus.
Yes, sir.
I didn't get the name, but in terms of the royal family, I think, and the link to racism, I think you're correct. You see, in this country, there still is this whole thing about what it is to be English and British, what that means, you know, the Union Jack, you know, the red, white and blue, Wales, Scotland and England together and Northern Ireland. And who sits at the top of that? You know, rule Britannia. Britannia rules the waves. Was the next line? Britain shall never, ever, ever be slaves. You know, that's the song. And at the top of that pile sits the royal family and the Queen. You know, and when those 13 kids died in that fire down in Deptford in, was it 1982? Right? Normally, under such a circumstance, right, the Queen, right, would actually express her condolences to the families. Literally, you'd get that from the Queen, right? You know, that's what you'd normally get. Something like that didn't happen in that case, right? So, yeah, she's 91. We pay for this woman, right, our taxes. What for? What for? It's a load of nonsense, right? So in that sense, yes, definitely, she sits at the top. If racism, white supremacy were a triangle, right, in the UK, she'd be at the top of it, right? You know what I mean? Britain shall rule Britannia. Britannia rules the ways. Britain shall never, ever be slaves. You know, there you go. It says it all, really.
Context of white supremacy. Mr. Fuller, I think he does regularly stress that racism, white supremacy is based on the royalist system where this group of folks are royal and they just get to ride around and look down on all the other lowly peasants. And racists have just made black people peasants, and then they squabble and compete amongst themselves for who's going to be the highest amongst the racist royal family. We have about 15 minutes left in the broadcast. If there are folks, if you're listening in, if you have a question you want to ask any of the listeners, you have a comment you want to add, another topic that popped up that you wanted to get commentary on that you didn't hear discussed. It's been about a month since we all have spoken. Anything that you all have been paying particular attention to or items that you think folks should be aware of?
Have you seen that film called Get Out?
African 1884 just mentioned that. I think he just had commentary. African 1884, did you want to share any insight since I think you just got to see the HD version?
Yes. I mean, I don't want to put in some spoilers and everything, but I think it's because I do know some non-white males here that are dating white females, white women, so I'm going to get them that for Christmas, you know, get the DVD once it's out and everything, because it has a lot of lessons. That's all I have to say.
Can you give us one lesson? There are no spoilers here. We talked about it previous. I think we talked about it in February or whenever it came out. So you want to give us one lesson that stood out?
In the sense that we're white folks, you know, white men and women tend to prey on our emotions and, and our vulnerability in that we don't really tap into logic really fast and everything. And you saw in the movie that this lady was the white female that was dating this brother, that was sleeping with this brother or raping this brother. She tended to just try and try to get close to his emotions and everything, and that kind of like confused him so much, you know. When white folks tend to be try to be good to you and everything, like doing all these nice things to you, saying all these nice words to you, you know, it tends to, you know, temper with our frequency in us being coded and being focused in trying to replace racism with justice, you know. And in the movie, really, it was really like depicted the way, like she was, like I said, the whole family was trying to, you know, get close to him and try to, you know, embrace him and everything. When he walked into the house, the first time he got there, they're like, we hug and everything. So a lot of non-white people feel like, whoa, this boy is so welcoming. They're really nice white folks and everything. But they had an agenda to that, you know. So that was very important.
Playing on.
It's into that. Sorry to cut in.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I've downloaded a copy of that. Well, I'm streaming it on my Kodi box anyway. So I got a good 1080p copy. So I'm 40 minutes into that so far, and I just wonder why, because I think the person, the director, is it Jordan Peele or Keegan Peele? Is it Key Peele or is it Jordan Peele?
Jordan Peele.
Jordan Peele, yeah. He's he has got a white mother himself, hasn't he?
I know he has a white wife. I'm not sure about his mom.
Yeah, I think his mother's white and then his wife's white.
Yeah, his mom is white.
Yeah, his mum's white, his wife's white, and he's making a film like that. I just thought it's pretty strange, but the white woman who is dating in the film anyway, she's very deceptive. She's really good. She's a true white woman, and the parents as well. But the whole what I'm seeing so far, the 45 minutes, is this like white cannibalism really on black flesh from what I'm seeing. But for him to write something like that as well, I just thought it very, very strange. Very strange. I don't know what anyone else thinks.
I heard an interview that he did. This was maybe a month or so ago. But the interesting part of the interview was that he was basically saying that people go to like horror movies and will be yelling at the screen or yelling at the TV, like, you know, don't go there or don't go up the stairs or the killer's right there. What are you doing? And he said that that was a big part of the thinking in putting this movie together. That people would be yelling, you know, get out, what are you doing? Get out of there, they're trying to kill you. That's what the audience would be doing. And he compared it to people being generally passive. He was talking about racism and saying that you have a lot of people who observe racism happening, but they don't do anything. They find other ways to not deal with it. They go watch television. And he said that he was trying to play with that notion of people generally being spectators, like racism happens on a pretty regular basis. And a lot of times people see it, they don't do anything. And then you're watching television where someone is experiencing racism and yelling, get out, get out, get out. And I even think all of this is from memory, so I'm kind of paraphrasing, but I even think that some of this was even connected to him being married to a white woman himself. And this get out, get out, get out, and he's married to a white woman himself. It was really interesting. I'd have to go back and share so people could read and come to their own conclusions. But yeah, it kind of stood out for that reason in and of itself. It was my thought on the whole movie when I watched it. Like, I don't know, because I was hearing a lot of people in the States, black people, saying this is the greatest counter-racist movie that has ever been made. And if black people just go see this, they will get an A+ in understanding racism. It was almost like they were putting it on par with, you know, Dr. Amos Wilson's work or Dr. Marimba Ani or Dr. Welsing or something. And how could that be? He's married to a white. Did he? I don't think this movie made him get out of his marriage. Anyway.
That's true. Accurate. That's true. And could I say something, Gus?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I think it's Mr. Fox who was asking why it's interesting that he's in a tragic relationship with a white lady at the same stuff like this. Also, for example, you look at Frantz Fanon, you know, the author. Where was he from? I can't remember where he was from, but he wrote the book Black Skin, White Masks, and he was also in a tragic relationship. you know. So I think some of these people write from their own experience, you know, they produce their life from their own experience. But I don't think, I don't know if they do change and or do they, I fail to understand what's behind their thinking. I mean, if you put out a movie like this, and do you understand that being in a tragic arrangement with a white female, that that's a form of racism, white supremacy, or do you just, I don't understand, you know, I would like to know what the train of thought is, you know.
On some level, that's got to be autobiographical, you know, it's got to be autobiographical for the author, for him. It has to be, because, you know, that question, what do white people say or do or talk about when black people are not around, right? That they bid on black people. That's what they do. They bid on us. You know who's going to get who, you know. And I just thought it was very accurate. You know, I really thought it was very accurate, you know, that you, this whole thing about remote controlling the black body, the ownership of the black body, you know, the rights to the black body, you know. And I would tell people to go watch it without telling them what the film's about. Just go watch it, you know, because really, you know, I think it speaks to black people that don't get it, you know, this is some of the stuff that these people actually do. They bid on your body. They come fill your muscles. And they want your body.
The Delectable Negro, we just finished. The person that dialed in last four digits, 3246, 3246. Did you have commentary?
Yes, sir. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Greetings to you, the host, the callers, and the listeners, and greetings to the international callers. I was wondering, I live here in the United States of America, North America. I was wondering, what do you think it will look like when white supremacy is over? Like, what will it mean the white people are doing in Europe? I would imagine, like, here in America, like in Africa and South America, perhaps it would be like they had to leave this area. But, you know, since white people are in Europe in large numbers, I'm just wondering, like, how do they get out of power? Like, how do you have so many of them take them out of power and not have white supremacy in Europe? I don't know what that would look like. I was wondering.
For sure. What would it look like in Europe if white supremacy was eradicated, since there's so many individuals classified as white in that part of the world? What do you all think it would, what would it look like? Any thoughts?
I mean, could I say something?
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, I see that for white supremacy to be eradicated, there would be no white people, because just being white in itself, that's white supremacy, you know. So if you're trying to eradicate white supremacy, I don't know if white people are ready to stop being white, especially in Europe, there's no question they're not ready for that, because even the level of discourse and discussion is not the state as it is in the US, in what you call America. Here, people don't, let me speak specifically for Austria, but white folks don't talk about racism, white supremacy, just like that. Even whatever you have in the US, you have all what you call critical whiteness or something like that. In Austria, people don't talk about stuff like that. So, but just to answer this question, for me, I think to eradicate white supremacy, white folks have to stop being white. That means Europe will not have any white people. I don't think white people in Europe are really not ready to stop being white. That's my answer.
Andrew, Frank Fanon, Mr. Fox, did you all want to respond to that? How would Europe look if racism, white supremacy was eliminated?
Yes. So go on, Mr. Fox.
Sorry, Andrew. It's a strange one because many non-white people, well, especially non-white black people, they don't even know that there's a system of racism, white supremacy going on. So if that system was to end, I could just probably just see an increase of so-called mixed race children in this country and in Europe. But then white people for that system, well, the system of racism, white supremacy to end, you have to get rid of white people because they're not going to, you know, stop this system to promote and practice a system of justice. It's like Michael Bradley, what he said is they're not going to give it up. They will actually, you know, click the switch and let the nuclear bombs go off, and then you'll have, you know, the aftermath of a nuclear holocaust. So it is a hard one because I don't see it ending in my generation or the generation next, because there's too few of us who actually got just an inkling of an understanding of what's going on. So I don't know what it would look like, but I don't see them stopping this system to create a system of justice. It has to be done by us, but I don't know exactly how we could do it so it would be an immediate thing, and I don't see this thing being immediate. So it's very hard. It's very hard.
I think that's a great question. You know, what would the world look like without white supremacy? You know,
I think he said Europe specifically. I think he was curious about Europe specifically because of the higher number of individuals classified as white. He can correct me if I was wrong, but I think he's asking about Europe specifically.
Europe. Okay. I'm not sure that one part of the world can be cleared of white supremacy, because then that means the whole world is cleared of white supremacy. Do you get what I mean? Like, you know, it's either it's worldwide or it's not. But okay, let's just take. And again, I'm not sure that Europe, because there's a lot of white people here. I'm not sure that Europeans will ever stop being racist without of their own accord. Do you get what I mean? Like just in Europe, I'm not sure that's ever. Not unless they're forced by non-white countries elsewhere on planet Earth, you know. I don't think Europe will ever be cleared of sort of white supremacy without other non-white countries making that happen. And I'm not sure, I don't think the few non-white people living in Europe have the numbers required, say, to do the job themselves economically, or in any other way, really. I think it's. I really, honestly believe it's a wider action, if you like, that's going to be required to clear Europe of. I wouldn't even call it white supremacy, just white power, if you like, or you know, because it's a worldwide thing. Do you get what I mean? So I don't think Europeans of their own accord are going to stop being racist. I don't think. I've seen no evidence to tell me that. Otherwise, it would have happened already. You know.
I agree. No evidence that they're going to voluntarily desist from this practice. Let's see. Did we miss Frank Fanon? And the caller 3246, I think you did say you were curious about Europe specifically because they do have a higher population of white folks in that area, right?
But yes, sir. Europe in particular, just because of the very high numbers, and it seems that this may be one of the origination points, you know, from Africa, then from Europe in particular, where they formed their, you know, genetics and all that sort of thing.
Right, right. Frank Fanon, did you want to respond? I don't think we've heard from you. Did you have a response to the question? Or
in terms of what Europe would look like when white supremacy ends, I think white people would basically turn in on themselves, because I don't think they can stop being violent. I think when white supremacy ends, they would simply start being violent towards themselves on the same scale that they are violent towards us at the moment. And that would then mean that Europe would be basically perpetually burning, really. Because there's peace in Europe because of the lack of peace elsewhere. So, at the moment. So, yeah. I think that that's what would happen in Europe if there was... and that's what would happen to white people if white supremacy was to end in Europe.
I think our Virginia Gardner, I think she had said something similar recently, that if there were no more niggers around for whites to abuse and terrorize, that whites would just have to niggerize and terrorize each other. That the violence, I think Frank Vernon, he had mentioned earlier the generational factor. Every 90 years, you got to have an outlet. Go kill out a bunch of people. Get out some of that aggression.
Purge.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That whites would do that. They would just, you know, have to have a purge if there were no niggers and just say, well, we're going to designate you whites. You're lower in the white royal family. So you all will now be the niggers and we're going to go to work killing and all the things that delectable Negro. Now you'll be the Negroes. That is the 90 minutes again. This is our shorter broadcast, just 90 minutes. But what a hoot. I'm going to check in with the election, the France election, really quick before we conclude the broadcast. We should be here next month. Hopefully we'll have no tech issues, but we should be here next month for the third Sunday in May. That will be trying to get my calendar click here, and it's okay, there we go. So next month, that'll be May 21st, third Sunday in May. That's when we'll be here. I guess we'll know about the presidential situation in France, and we'll see what else has evolved over the next 30 days. If folks have questions, comments, if you have a question that you would like to submit via email, and then we can just ask folks when they come in for the program next month, we can do that as well. But I definitely think it is important, again, I think it's been stressed all throughout this broadcast, to really make sure we're thinking about racism, white supremacy as a global problem. I think that's one thing that came out in the broadcast. Racists, they do a lot of the same things worldwide. That in and of itself is very revealing to me about what it means to be white, and the fact that whites are not going to voluntarily stop abusing black people. We're going to have to take it upon ourselves, black people, to change our behavior, to learn more, to do as much as we can to solve this problem immediately. Thanks everyone for taking time out of their schedule to participate. Always learn a lot being able to converse with you all and hear what you all are seeing in your part of the world. Again, Mr. Fox, Andrew, Frank Fanon, all joining us in the UK, and African 1884 joining us from Austria. Great hearing from you, and hopefully we'll have you all and some of our other international listeners join us again next month. For all the listeners, we'll be here later on in the week. You can visit the Black Talk Radio Network page. You can visit the Facebook page to get updates, descriptions, program times. If you have questions, if you can't find something in the archives, again, just drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. Stay safe for everyone. I again emphasize, I know the weather is getting warmer here over in the UK as well. Great. Get outside. Enjoy the sunshine. But I would encourage folks to remain codified. Racists, they do not take a break from practicing white supremacy just because it's warm weather. And that would mean sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. You do not want to be caught behind the wheel or just out and about, period. Have that be the day that you get stopped by a race soldier and your life might be on the line, and you've had a few beers or a couple cigarettes, cannabis, any other narcotics that racists provide. I just have seen a lot of evidence that us being intoxicated, man, that makes it way easier for racists to continue to dominate and terrorize us. I think Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, Dr. Kamau Kamban, Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., long list of black people that we say we have a lot of regard for their work and how they've helped us get a better understanding of racism, I think a lot of them would say, hey, I think we would do much better putting white folks out of business if we could remain sober. Let's keep our brain computer operating at maximum efficiency so we can get these concepts to improve our quality of life, permanently eradicate the problem, white people, racist man, racist woman, racist child. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Context of White Supremacy signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.